Yesterday we were getting ready for it. Today we're living it. Victory Monday here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Ben Tate exercising a day of frustration. The running game really didn't get going, but he punched it in there for the 5 yard. Who's down? And the Browns win it. Folks, it is Monday, so your home team made 7 game-changing plays yesterday, which means your game-changer multiplier is 8 times today only at Horseshoe Casino in Cleveland. Make sure you get to Horseshoe today to redeem your game-changer multiplier. That means you can take a great Sunday and make it an even better Monday as you turn a little bit of cheddar into a whole lot of cheese. 8 times multiplier. Let's go, folks, over at the Horseshoe Casino. Go support our good friends over there. All right, it is time to go back to the phones here on this Victory Monday. But before we do that, we're going to talk about Paul Kruger. And I think Paul Kruger was a guy who gutted it out after getting an epidural against Pittsburgh. You know, he had been dominant early in the season. The back slowed him down. Wasn't quite there against Jacksonville. But, man, was he there against the Raiders. 3 sacks against a team that allowed only 5 sacks all season coming into that game, wreaking havoc, forcing a fumble. He had led the team in terms of stops against the run. Paul Kruger looked like an absolute impact player on the edge of this defense.
Oh, he definitely did. In my eyes, I love the fact that you got a guy like Paul Kruger who, you know, as we said, you know, earlier in the season, he's going to rush the passer 90% of the time, finally getting home. And I think for a lot of Cleveland Browns fans, you know, everyone talked about, you know, that B word, that bust word last year after he came in. His expectations were so high because the dollar amount we associated with him, you stole him away from the Baltimore Ravens, you know, on their high of success and playing in that defense. Very similar scheme. But I think that, you know, Paul Kruger has finally found his stride. And I think that Jim O'Neill and this defense has really found their stride. The combinations, the packages, you saw us mix and match different personnel groups to match the Raiders personnel groups. And I think we're finding our way. We're not one of those dominant defenses that's just going to line up and we're going to beat you. We're going to beat you with, you know, with multiple different looks and different personnel to allow keep people to play, you know, stay fresh. You talked about, you know, Mingo, you know, didn't quite rush the passer, but he's covering in man-to-man situations. And I think that combination of Kruger, Sheard, Mingo, however we use them, has allowed Kruger to really dive in and rush the passer and be an impact player.
You know what's impressive about a guy that big? He's that strong. He's built like a tank. When you're getting pushed by a tackle and they're trying to swing you by, you know, by the quarterback to create that pocket for the quarterback, and he does this double arm swats the offense lineman's arms down, puts his foot in the ground, cuts on a dime, and he's able to come in there and make a sack. I mean, the athleticism of a guy that big is what's impressive. When you watch him and how he moves and how he uses his strength and his quickness, you start to see the whole package, and you're like, ah, that's why we brought this guy here, man. He's pretty good.
He's very good at using his hands as well. Very good at getting the linemen off of him, doing a little wax on, wax off. Paul Kruger coming to play, 3 sacks now in this game, leading this team in sacks on the season. All right, we're going to back to the phones, as we said, 216-578-0850. Tom in Cleveland, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. Great show as always. I got a question maybe for Joe more than anything. Hey, Joe, first of all, I miss all those fake catches you used to make for touchdowns in the corner.
Oh, I appreciate that. But
yeah.
It's been a long time ago.
I know, but they were great. I'm just wondering, you know, we're forced to develop all these different receivers right now. You know, they're thrown to 4 or 5 different guys. I guess it's a two-part question. Is it tougher for a defense to prepare for someone who spreads the ball around a lot, like, you know, maybe New England did when, you know, or always does? Or I'm just thinking when you take Gordon and put him in the mix now the defenses can't really just look for that mega receiver. They've got to look for those other guys as well.
Yeah, I think any time that you're able to hit, you know, the plethora, the stable of receivers that you have, no matter what team you're on, you make it harder on a defense. But when these guys understand it, the most important thing for a group of receivers is to know what each and every one is doing. And that way you can start to play. And when you really start to learn the little things of the game, especially at the receiver position, the big things start to pay off. But these guys are doing such a good job of rubbing off each other, creating the picks, doing the little things on first down, finding the sticks, Miles Austin catching the tough balls. You know, Gabriel gets the screen, gets north and south, makes one move and gets north and south. So I think a defense, they've got to spend a lot of time and actually learn exactly what each individual receiver does well, and then they've got to go accordingly. But when you have one person and one person only, you become one-dimensional. But here we've got so many guys doing so many things. And the thing is that everybody's kind of doing the same thing. So it's not like you can say that, you
sure
know, Travis Benjamin's the only guy running a deep crossing. That's not true, because Hawkins caught one yesterday. You know, everybody's playing their part. You've got the screen game. You've got the deep pass. You've got some first some short first down passes or some, you know, third and short passes were getting open. So I think it's harder for a defense to scheme against kind of a stable of wide receivers versus just kind of keying on one guy.
And I agree. I mean, the caller makes a great point that it does. And I think that, you know, but I will say interjecting Josh Gordon back into this mix,
that's,
you know,
it's a
whole different ball of wax because, you know, Josh Gordon will have to play himself back into shape. Josh Gordon will have to prove his productivity to Brian Hoyer. He will, of course, for, you know, the teams that play down the road, he will garner a lot of attention, which will only open things up for Jordan Cameron, which we saw last year, and the exceptional play of Hawkins and Gabriel and Austin. It just makes it that much easier when you add a guy like him. You look at, you know, what type of season Golden Tate's having, you know, opposite Calvin Johnson, and now even still, you know, with the absence of Calvin Johnson, Golden Tate has become the guy. You know,
he's less than 100 yards away from his career high.
Exactly, and I just, so it's a, that scare factor when you have a guy like Josh Gordon or Calvin Johnson or Larry Fitzgerald, they garner so much attention. But you're right, Joe. In preparation, then you have to dissect who runs what routes and where do they line up. Are they a top edge of the number guy? Are they a bottom edge of the number guy? Are they the motion guy? Well, when they motion him, what do they do? And it adds just a lot of content for you to learn in 5 or 6 days of preparation.
No question. And right now, I think Andrew Hawkins, one of the best route runners in the NFL. Austin, as I said, is 9 straight catches have gone for first downs. Gabriel getting north and south. And I think the thing that, to me, that we haven't even really seen yet are a lot of those passes where the guy's able to take that out route, catch it, and get upfield. We haven't had that perfect connection yet on some of these catch and run opportunities. And when we do, I think things can be even more dynamic for this offense. Let's go to Mark in Youngstown talking about what the Browns 4-3 record really says. What does it say, Mark?
Mike, but that's close enough.
It says what?
No, I said I'm Mike, but Mark's close enough.
Oh, I apologize. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, are you guys by a window by any chance?
I mean, I can see outside.
You ought to look. I think a lot of people lost their minds. They got to be outside because they're not in their heads. The Browns are, 4-3? Every time we win, we have to, whether we win or we lose, we have to hear all these, I would say, stupidity, the way people think. We lost arguably one of the best centers in the NFL. He's like your quarterback. You lose your quarterback, what happens to your team? Our defense is not playing great, so now people have to just get on the offense. You guys played in the NFL, two of you. There have been many given days that a first play of the game or last play of the game might have contributed to a win or loss. And these people that, like the Bostonian, I think he got hit in the head too many times by foul balls. The Browns are 4-3.
Right.
We need to relish this. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. I'm 64. I don't know how many more games I'm going to see. But they're a fun group to watch, and they're only going to get better.
I agree with you here. You know, Matt, listen to this one. How many times have you gone into a meeting, and whether you defensively shut a team down or offensively we put numbers up, coaches are still going to critique you. So even though it's a victory Monday, coaches are still doing their job because that's what they get paid for. As a player, you've got to learn because nobody plays a perfect game. You know, there's absolutely nobody. Jerry Rice will tell you nobody's ever played a perfect game. You're always being critiqued. So having said that, enjoy the win because they are so hard to come by at this league. Nobody
yes.
in that locker room cares.
Yeah,
nobody in that locker room cares right now other than they won the game.
Jim Donovan said it best. I mean, it's, again, Pittsburgh's, you know, been through for 522. They beat the Colts. It's all this, you know, it's the talk of the NFL right now. But they get one win in that win column just like we do.
They get
the
letter W. That's
And by the way, the Browns held that team to 10 points just a few weeks ago, including a touchdown that came when the game was completely out of hand. Really held them to 3. Let's go. Browns defense definitely stepping up. All right, George in Cleveland, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Hey, thanks for having me.
You got it.
I want to say two things. The first off is I think that might have been the largest spread as a favorite the Browns have had in a long time. So it's showing that we won yesterday.
And they covered.
Yeah, they covered, too, that we're winning games that we're supposed to win, and I don't know if that was a byproduct of getting embarrassed at Jacksonville, but, you know, it's just nice to see that we come in as a favorite, we're playing a lesser team, and we actually hold and win the game regardless of how ugly it was. It was a win, and to the point you just made.
No question.
The second the actual question I got is, what do you guys think of the difference of Hoyer is right now? So, like, the first few games, he just seems so decisive. He's in the pocket, making good decisions, quick-minded, hitting his receivers, sometimes in stride, a lot better than it's been these past two, where just almost sometimes seems like he's a liability. You know, you have the Jacksonville pick where he threw behind Tate, and yesterday, if even one of those balls are caught by a Raider, we could have been looking at a loss today.
No question. I don't know what's different. I think obviously when Brian Hoyer had the running game working so well, you had play action and scheming that had guys running, I mean, ridiculously wide open, and we're not seeing that as much now. A little more pressure on Brian Hoyer, and I think, you know, listen, the fact of the matter is when you win this game, yet you go 2 of 12 on third down. This team right now, I think, as someone who is a huge supporter of the team, obviously, I am, and I know many of you out there are as well, when it gets into third and long, you get nervous. You don't feel good about what's going to happen when this team is in a third and long situation. And right now, they're bottom four in the league in terms of third down conversions, and I think that's a big part of it. Again, it's just, I think Brian Hoyer is good. What's good about Brian Hoyer is good. What's bad about Brian Hoyer is bad. It just kind of is what he is, and you're seeing that manifest itself in different ways as these games are unfolding.
Here's one for you. The defense, our opponents each week now have more tape to study. That's the other thing. We have more games out there on film, so they have more film to break down. They get to know even better than what they thought they knew what we're good at and what we're bad at. So they get to study. They get to break things down, and they're going to try to take those things away from us. So I think what Brian does well, teams are obviously doing a good job. They're stopping our run, which takes away our play-action pass. When we don't have play-action pass working, then you know we see a little bit of a different Brian. So, again, there's more film for the opponent to see right now, and it's only going to get worse or harder, I should say, as we go on.
You're right about that, and I think I know, Nathan, this is kind of how you feel, is the more we get exposed to Brian Hoyer, yes, he has the record that you talk about, and yes, he's the starter of this football team that is winning football games for us right now, but to be critical, I think as we see more of Brian Hoyer, more of his flaws will continually to come out. More of his tendency, more of his inaccuracy will continue to shine through. And against good teams, you know, the Colts, the Texans, strong defensive teams, they don't drop four picks. You know, they take those to the house. And that's where what really falls on Ray Farmer's shoulders is to make that judgment call on paying one guy to be the next 3 to 5, you know, the quarterback of your football team for the next 3 to 5 years, you know, millions of dollars. And so I think the more we get to his body of work, the more the flaws come out. You know, as long as we keep winning the games that we should win, you know, I have no problem with it. But how he plays in games that we will be an underdog and he's to play his best, can he rise in those occasions?
Well, the good news is, too, he's also going to be more comfortable. He still hasn't played a full season. You know, the stats we quote 7-3 as a starter, 5-1 at home. That includes a Buffalo game that he didn't even play a quarter in. So this is still a guy who hasn't even played really a full NFL season as a starting quarterback. So I think adjustments are being made to him. And now we'll see if he can counterpunch those adjustments as this season progresses. And you'll be able to make that decision down the road when the time comes. But I think that with Brian Hoyer, you know, there are little things that you'd like to see to clean up. I mean, one play that stuck out in my mind was that third down. I think it was 3rd and 4. He had Hawk, who kind of gave the jerk route in and out,
right,
was open, but the throw was a little too wide. He had to dive and catch it, and you have to give the ball back against another team. You know, that's a first down that helps you run out the clock and end the game in your 4-minute offense, where you didn't have that luxury because it was exactly 4 minutes. They ended up calling a timeout after that play, and you had to punt it back. So it's little things like that that fortunately the Browns are overall doing enough to get away from. And then hopefully if he can, you know, counterpunch, as I said, to the tendencies and the studies that are being done on him, then maybe we'll get kind of a little bit of a resurgence here now again in the second half of the season.
We talked about this before, and I'm becoming redundant with it, but when you do get Josh Gordon back and you get when you get the guy that can literally take the top off of a defense, they can no longer hover in that 15 to 20 yard mark. They've got to respect the long ball. So it opens up a whole different thing. And, you know, if I remember correctly, Brian hit Josh on a few deep balls last year. I mean,
yeah, I'm pretty sure he had 190 yards the first game against Minnesota.
It's a different dimension. So
yes,
that's what we're missing. We've just got to hang tight and do the things that we need to do to win these games. But when you do get that guy back, it's a whole different dimension. And I think it gives Kyle Shanahan just a whole whole other section of book that he's probably been hiding for the past few weeks.
It's going to be great. We can't wait to get him back, and they will when the Browns travel to Atlanta to take on the Falcons. When we come back, we're going to wrap things up here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. We'll get some more of your phone calls, share our final thoughts here on this Victory Monday, as the Browns did win. Yes, they did. 23-13 over the Raiders, and it was a game that I think really is going to be a positive momentum and building block for this team as they head on to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers this Sunday. But today we can still bask in the glory of a Browns victory at First Energy Stadium.